Chapter 71. In the closest thing to a corner she could find, in a circular library, Tia was working on her assignment for Murder Sharp. The man might be an utter horror, but he was also a font of knowledge about Parol. And as far as Tia knew, with Marta Martins having fled, he was the only source of knowledge about Parol available. There was nothing in even the forbidden libraries about Parol. Damn Luxals. But Murder Sharp dropped the answers to her biggest questions like they were nothing.
"The other colours," she'd ventured, "they have metaphysical effects."
"Meta-what?" Oh, right, Murder Sharp hadn't gotten his education in the Chromeria. Best not to make it look like she was trying to rub it in.
"Like, red makes you more prone to anger, and superviolet makes you more logical over time. What does Parol do?"
He chuckled. "Haven't noticed, huh? Maybe you're special, like me. I'm a bit of a curiosity among Parol drafters." A curiosity. That was one way to put it. But she painted a carefully neutral but interested look on her face. He'd given in. "Parol makes you a feeler. Think about it. It's way down below sub-red, opposite to superviolet. Superviolet makes you more logical. Parol makes you empathetic. You get incredibly attuned to the emotions around you, whether mundane or magical. I'm lucky. I'm just aware of them. They don't affect me. Other Parol drafters, most of the few we got, aren't so lucky. They themselves feel what others are feeling. For some, to a horrifying degree. Weep with those who are weeping. Rejoice with those who are rejoicing. It could have been written with a Parol in mind. That refined feeling, though, is our greatest weakness and our greatest strength. It's why we feel light itself. First we get good at feeling light's effects, then we simply become aware of light itself, then we can split it."
"All Parols are light splitters?"
How could the Chromeria not know such a thing?
"One in 10, maybe. Which is about 1,000 times more frequently than other colours."
It turned out that half of what Marta Martins had taught her about Parol was worthless. Parol made a gel, Marta had said. Master Sharp had admitted that could be done, but wondered why you'd want to use it very often.
"There's a resonance point higher up that can be used to make a gel. We only use it to mark targets because it evaporates quickly. Other than that? Good for Parol torches, I guess, but I just fling the light directly, so maybe if you want to give Parol to someone else for some reason..."
And then he'd shown her another resonance point. It was a gas. It was also much, much easier to draft than Parol's solid or gel forms. Then he'd given her the assignment she was working on now. She drafted a shell of Parol in a bubble around her. It was, of course, invisible. It was also so delicate that any touch shattered it, but delicate didn't mean useless. With the bubble surrounding her, she drafted Parol gas to fill it. This, too, was invisible, which was why she could practice in the library without worrying about being interrupted, so long as she flipped the page of the tome open in her lap every so often and didn't let them see her eyes. By drafting Parol, Tia was made much more sensitive to the touch of colours. Having Parol gas actually touching her skin seemed to enhance that sensitivity even further. Having it surround her also meant she was breathing it, though it had no taste and only the faintest scent. The Parol bubble not only acted as a good way to contain the Parol gas, but it was also a lens. Just as a blue lens filtered out all colours except blue, or as a clear glass window still filtered out some superviolet light, so too did Parol have an effect on the light that passed through it. It was like a gentle sieve. A sieve of light? The idea had seemed impossible, but it was true. Parol nudged every colour closer to its true colour, that spectrum at which it could be drafted. Through even this much Parol, each colour seemed more vibrant, brighter. Master Sharp said this was evidence that Parol was the master colour, except he said it like it was capitalised.
"Parol is the master colour," he'd said, his voice reverent.
But Tia had heard red magisters come up with reasons why red was the best colour. Blue magisters told their upper-level discipuli why blue was the true colour, or Hollum's favourite shade, the colour of sea and sky. Yellows made the case for why yellow was Orholm's favourite, the strong centre of the spectrum whose solid heart was unbreakable gold. As far as Tia was concerned, much as she would like Parol to be amazing and great, It was her only colour, after all. Parol was just another colour with some quirks. Like yellow, could be liquid or frozen, and was useful in each form. Tia had seen the 10th year discipuli, those few permanent students who were able to convince their sponsors that they could best serve them by doing research, experiment with polarized lenses. When one lens was placed in a beam of light, nothing appeared to happen. When a second was placed downstream in the same beam, still nothing happened, until either lens was rotated. Then the beam of light went dark. This seemed to be something similar, unless, of course, it was something totally different. She was forbidden to ask anyone about it. She finished her assignments for her other lectures, maintaining the bubble as well she could while doing so. It was impossible, and even when she did it right, she realized she soon ran out of air. For that matter, she was inhaling an awful lot of parol gas. Was that healthy? On the scale of things likely to kill you, T, breathing parol goes somewhere below murderous heretics, insane assassins, conquering pagans, and plain stupidity. That was one way to look on it. She finished her work and headed back to her barracks. She tried to maintain the bubble, drafting in quick gulps, averting her eyes from passers-by, then returning them to normal, and glancing once again after traversing only a few paces. But the bubble kept snapping from her uneven support of it. The rolling motion of walking itself broke the bubble at whatever direct support beams she attached it to. Then when she was sure she was supporting the bubble correctly, walking so lightly and fluidly, and holding the bubble at so many points it shouldn't break, she watched as the force of the wind from her walking caved the front of the bubble in. It held form for 1 second, then cracked and split and dissolved into nothing. Again. Tsst! The whisper almost didn't register. Tia walked right past the open door, totally absorbed in her, oh, hell. She froze. Master Sharp. He was dressed in the embroidered linen and wide belt of a rich Hrothgari, with his petasos worn on his back, the ties interwoven with gold threads. A part of her noted the clothing with approval, rich enough to allow free movement around most of the Chromeria, but not so rich as to be memorable. He beckoned her to step into the room he was in. It was an office of some kind. He'd clearly broken in. She made sure no one was looking and stepped in. "This will be quick," Master Sharp said. He grinned at her, all perfect teeth. He closed the door behind her. "The time has come for you to prove your loyalty. Sunday is only 3 days away. The White is attending rehearsals right now. You will go to a room, 2 floors below her room. Out the window you'll find a knotted rope. It will take you up 1 floor. Then you're to use these to climb to the next." He handed her a bag of what felt like rocks. She took one out. It was a crescent roughly the size of her hand. The mouth of the crescent was almost flat. A tab of blue luxin stuck out from the mouth. "You wipe the wall as clean as you can get it. You peel the tab off, and you stick it immediately to the wall, hard. It'll hold 5 times your weight. When you climb down, you pull this off the bottom." He flipped out a ring. "It's attached to a string. The string is coated with a solvent. You use the string to pop the crescent off the wall. This is important. You're to leave no trace, understood? There may be a little luxin left on the wall. It'll dissolve in minutes." "What am I supposed to do when I get there?" "There will still be a blackguard or two posted right outside the door. Her room slave has been dealt with."
"Killed?" Tia asked.
He still hadn't answered her question.
"Sent on a task. We believe the shimmer cloaks are in the bottom drawer of the White's desk, that or in her slave's dresser in the attached slave quarters."
So that was the goal. Shimmer cloaks, just like they'd guessed.
"We expect you have 30 minutes. The door to the balcony has been left unlocked."
"You have a blackguard in your employ," Tia said. "Why not have him get it for you?"
Master Sharp looked at her like she was stupid. Oh, because they didn't want to expose him. Or her. The blackguards would be the first people suspected, even though no one would want to suspect them. Who else could steal something from the White's very chambers? The further implication was that whichever blackguard was the Order's man, he would be somewhere with a good alibi during this job. Perhaps it would be someone who was with the White right now. Regardless, it would also have to be someone who could have gotten into the White's room quite recently in order to unlock the balcony door, which was kept locked at all times since the assassination attempt a few months ago. Between those 2 bits of information, surely Tia could limit the pool of possible traitors.
later.
"What did the cloaks look like?" Tia asked.
Murder Sharp bared his two white teeth at her. Maybe it was a grin. He showed her the inside of his cloak. It was a supple grey cloth, fine woven. He flipped the cloak over and showed her the pocket at the neckline, gave her a glimpse of the golden choker inside.
"One of them is burned at the hem. There should be two. We know the burned one is there. If you bring both, you will find great favour. If you bring only the burned one, they may still not trust you."
"You're telling me I could bring you a treasure as great as a shimmer cloak and still not be trusted?" Tia demanded.
"The room's Prudence 27. Get moving,"
Master Sharp said. He scowled as if he wished he hadn't given away the part about the two cloaks.
"Oh, and the trick with the parol bubble is to support it with the gas itself. No hard points. If the gas is dense enough, you can hold an open connection to it, and without your eyes, black orbs of the night. My own master said that our ancient forebears could hold the cloud in formation around them without a shell even as they moved, even in wind or while sprinting or fighting."
That was impressive. "But why would that help?" Tia asked.
"The shimmer cloaks help us light splitters attain invisibility. The mechanics of the cloaks are different, but the idea was based on something, you know."
"You mean—" Tia started.
It was impossible. "The ancient masters were called Mistwalkers for a reason. They didn't need cloaks,"